Does the wind and waves act like they have ears and they listen to him? Who is this who commands even the waves? And of course, the answer is God. Jesus is God. That's what Matthew's trying to tell us in the way he tells the story today too. That's the emphasis. So, guess everything scary is over now. We're just going to get off the boat into the dark and climb up a steep hill into some tombs in Gentile country where people worship demons. Or, you know, they don't know it. They're just worshiping false gods. And we're going to meet some demon-possessed men coming out of the tombs. They're so violent they can't be with society in the middle of the night. No problem. Thank you, Jesus. I love scary movies. You know, this is the experience for the disciples. I memorized some scriptures to help fall asleep at night and to fall back asleep in the middle of the night when I wake up. In the daytime, I can always distract myself. If I've got problems that can't be solved in this moment that are bothering me, I'll just clean the workbench. I did that yesterday. I was so proud of myself. And I mowed the lawn. That was wonderful. You know, when you're busy, you can put your problems in perspective and distract yourself. But when I wake up at 3 or 4 or 2 in the morning, there's my brain. There it is. Nothing to stop it. So I got to memorize some stuff. So I memorized the 23rd Psalm. Very easy and short, beautiful little psalm. We've heard it so many times. It was easy. But I realized something in the middle of the night. As I was trying to remember which part comes next. The Lord is my shepherd. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Oh, that's good. I want to be righteous. What comes right after that? Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Hey, time out, Jesus. Time out, good shepherd. I thought you were leading me in paths of righteousness. What are we doing in the valley of the shadow of death? Now, as I had heard this growing up, I always thought, well, that's what happens to sheep sometimes. You just get lost and get in the wrong places. But that's not how this thing is being told. This good shepherd's leading me, and suddenly I'm in the valley of the shadow of death. That's what's going on for these disciples. Come on, disciples, I'm going to lead you. We're going to nearly die in a boat, go in the middle of the night to hostile Gentile country, find some tombs, and meet a couple of people that are so, how do you say it, so possessed that you can't even be around them. Now, the word in Greek for violent, these men were so violent that no one could come near them. It's a word that has a lot of color. It fits with a lot of less dramatic experiences. This word, chapalos, means difficult, hard, troublesome, fierce. And in 2 Timothy, when the Apostle Paul says, in the last days, there will be difficult times, it's that same Greek word. There will be times like these demon-possessed men. Difficult times. You've been around difficult people, right? You've been a difficult person. Let's just be honest. There are times, you know, when somebody says, what's gotten into you? That's a reference to demon possession. What's gotten into you? Really, what has gotten into you? Is it nachos, Doritos? No, it's a spirit. What's gotten into you? Like, why are you not acting like yourself? Thank you for laughing. That was very gratifying. But yes, you've been a difficult person. You've been around difficult people. Imagine that just to the uttermost. I mean, this is a problem that we encounter. This is the world that we live in. As I recently mentioned, Jesus didn't come to a peaceful, wonderful, perfect world and die peacefully in his sleep. He came to a troubled planet and he died on a cross because things were not right and things still are not right in many, many places and a little bit everywhere. All right, so Jesus brings them into the midst of this valley of the shadow of death, into this trouble where there's difficult people. I just want to tell you, if I mess up the rest of the sermon and nothing else happens today, Jesus has the right to guide your life in a way that's difficult, even to bring you into the presence of difficult people for reasons you don't understand. You may not see any advantage, any purpose to it, but Jesus has the right to do it, and he's smart enough to know what to do with it. That's what's happening here. There's no explanation about how strategic this whole thing was. He's leaving thousands of God's people to go to two Gentile people who know nothing about the Bible, know nothing to do with it, don't know how to properly worship God, supposedly, and he's going to invest so much power into them. All right, it's disruptive for the disciples, and as I've been mentioning. It's disruptive for the district. It's disruptive for the people of that region. As I was prepping this sermon, I learned about a scam operation that's going on in Southeast Asia. I think this is pretty hard to get your head around. But there are scam artists working in offices that are advertising false investments so that people will take a second mortgage on their home, spend their life savings, go into debt, and lose all the money they have investing in what's supposed to be a great investment, but it's a pure lie. There's no truth to it at all. Do you know how much money has been generated in this organized crime in the year that this article was written? $10.5 trillion stolen from people. That much money stolen by lies. Now, how do you feel about the people that are lying and doing that? Not super great. No, you may not babysit my children. I'm sorry. You're not good people. You're bad people. Now, here's the rest of the story. Those employees are largely made of Chinese nationals who see an advertisement for an excellent white-collar job in the country just over the border. And they think, this is my chance to take care of my family. They go there, and when they get there, their passport is taken from them, their phone is taken from them, they're beaten, and they're forced into slavery 16 hours a day, sometimes handcuffed to their desk. They are scam slaves. They're enslaved. That's what's going on. That's the disruption in the Decapolis. That's what's going on the far side of the lake. Jesus has been ministering to God's sheep, and over on the other side of the lake, there's these two men that are enslaved by evil. They had a mama. Somebody gave birth to them. Somebody cared about them. And they were nothing but trouble. But God cared about those two men, as bad as they were. They were creating a terrible disruption, but it doesn't mean that God didn't care. When Jesus comes to disrupt the disruption, just like a mom who comes to solve a problem after she gets off the phone, even if he seems a little unreasonable or unlike the calm Jesus that we know, or the sweet Jesus that carries around the tender lambs and makes them feel safe all the time, even if he seems extreme to go to such a place, he does it with a real beauty and dignity. He does it to create something beautiful. When Jesus disrupts disruption, it's delightful. Now, I have to tell you a sort of weird testimony here. When I was in seminary, my seminary friends and I really wanted to know if the spiritual stuff in the Bible was true. We believed it. So we asked our professors, you know, are there really demons? And they were like, kind of hem and haw, like, you know, you can't say from the Bible or any education that there's not. We'd ask the guest speakers, are there really demons? Is there really exorcism? Well, yeah, you know, there is. Even the Presbyterians acknowledge it. You know, look in the Old Testament. There are demons. King Saul, he got demonized. Look in the New Testament. Jesus is casting them out. Look in the book of Acts. They're being cast out. Look in the early church writings, the writings of the early Christian in the first few centuries. They talk a lot about casting out demons. It's a thing. It's real. That's problematic. When I discovered that the Bible was true and the foundational source of all my knowledge, the first problem I experienced in my head is like, oh no, now I'm crazy. You know, now nobody's going to think of me as rational and sane because I believe in angels and devils now. I believe in a spiritual realm that is not accepted in our culture. But I've witnessed two exorcisms in my life. I've seen what happens when demons are cast out. It's in the Bible, and it's real. One was at a Presbyterian, well, mostly Presbyterian pastors' conference, the West Coast Pastors' Conference, kind of highly revered in the old PCUSA Presbyterian Church among evangelicals, a good conference. And some folks who were doing a healing ministry said, well, if you'd like to see a demonstration of some healing ministry, we're going to have it after this session. Come over to this room. So I did. I thought, oh, boy, I can't wait to see that. And there was these are pastors, and there was a pastor who was receiving exorcism, receiving it, while pastors watched. And Has anybody ever led preschool before? All right. Now, if you have an outbreak in preschool and you've got really unruly preschoolers who are tired and hungry and mad and upset because their dog got run over, you know, they're just hard. That's what it's like casting out demons, except they're really bad. I mean, they are hard to corral. It took a long time for the team of exorcists to cast out the multiple demons from this poor victim. But this is the point I really want to make. When it was over, you could almost reach out and touch the love of God. The peace of God, the love of God was so present that I don't have words to describe it, and I wish I could convey to you how excellent and how real it was. We have scary movies. We had all the chainsaw movies. We had all the, you know, bodily harm scary movies. But then the movie producers realized that's not scary enough. We need spiritual scary movies. We need movies about exorcism. But you know what you don't get in the scary movies? You don't get the love of God. In a real exorcism, the love of God is in control and doing everything, from the authority to the peace that the victim receives. And Jesus never said to someone who had demons cast out, "Go and sin no more, you wretch." There's never a sense of moral culpability, even though it is possible to be morally culpable for things that would demonize a person. Jesus heals. And the exorcism is a healing. That was the first one I saw. The second one I saw, the woman who was receiving exorcism was physically choked, and you could see it and hear it. It's incredible, but the same experience. When it was over, there was just this wonderful love of God. That's Jesus' heart. That's his authority, and that's what he wants to do. And he wants to do that in our circumstances when we are a difficult person or we're dealing with a difficult person. Jesus doesn't come with his authority just to put somebody in their place and make them feel bad about the bad things they've done. He comes to bring love and to bring things back into order. That's what exorcism does. Kind of strange topic for Mother's Day. But don't worry, I'm going to get normal now because I'm going to talk about my barefoot, unicycle riding, long-haired hippie friend from Oregon. So I probably shouldn't say this, but I want to pretend that I'm like 15% hippie. You know, like it's, I should have some kind of validation for it. I grew up in Oregon, and there's a little part of the culture there that's like that. And anyway, I was in my church in Oregon and looking out at the empty parking lot. Along comes this long-haired, barefoot guy from across the street on a unicycle. I said, I got to meet him. So I went over, and he's a genius, a brilliant man, just a really intelligent person, and had a super high IQ and almost decided not to graduate from high school because it was just so dumb. You know, kind of countercultural and super smart. Instead of working, he'd go to the casino and win at poker. Just count cards, do whatever smart people do and win. And he got tangled up with me, and we hiked and we fished. He went fishing with me in November with bare feet because he wanted to be grounded, touching the ground. Yeah. He caught a steelhead and a coho. I was so proud of him. And he told me he believed in God. He said, it's just absolutely stupid not to. You know, if you have enough intelligence and you observe, you believe in God. But you know what by the way, there's an effect, so there must be a cause. And nothingness is not a cause. That's all, you know, the intelligence you need to believe in God. But what he didn't have was the willingness to follow Jesus. Because following Jesus means being ready to go into the valley of the shadow of death, wherever he leads you. Some people, and he was intelligent enough to know that instantly, as soon as he were to say, okay, Jesus, I surrender. I know that you really are the Son of God. I know that I need to follow you. It's clear. You created me. You have an agenda. You want me to be on board with your agenda. He knew that the minute he did that, that would be the death of whatever recreational marijuana use he might have had in his life. The Bible says, you know, be sober and don't be drunk, which means don't be high. He knew that. He's smart enough to get that. He knew that would be the end of whatever else he had on his mind that he wanted to do that wasn't where Jesus was leading. So the challenge as we come to the end of this is if you've never decided to surrender to Jesus and make him your shepherd, to go where he's leading, I challenge you to do it. You're smart enough to know that God is real. You're smart enough to know that all this didn't come out of nothing. You're smart enough to know that Christianity is not like other religions, that the Bible's not like other books, and that Jesus is not like other teachers. You're smart enough to see that. But what I challenge you to do is to trust God enough to follow Jesus and open your heart to him. It's a matter of trust. And what we have before us in this passage today is a Jesus who can be trusted even in the darkest, most chaotic place. He will win. He can take you there and you can be okay. So that's the challenge for those of you who are already following Jesus, already disciples. What I challenge you to do if you're already a follower of Jesus is to enter into somebody's dark place, into their scary valley, shadow of death, their grief. Give them a call. If somebody's grieving a loss, acknowledge it. Say, I'm sorry for the loss of your mother, or I'm sorry for what you're going through. I just want you to know I've been thinking about you. Open up your heart to letting somebody share things that are painful for you to hear. Have empathy, as Jesus would say. Of course, that applies to so many lessons. It's just, I think, a way to honor what Jesus did with his disciples in this account. And maybe I should say as a church, too, I should probably, you know, address our whatever assortment of elephants in the room we have. You know, some things go great for us and some things don't. Some things feel successful and some things don't. But I want to challenge us to trust Jesus and say that he can lead us, even if he leads us to a place where we don't understand what he's trying to accomplish and it feels dark and scary and like there's a lot of death in it. Jesus is strong enough to do what needs to be done in the worst situation. And he leads in places that don't make sense to us, but they make sense to him in his heart. So I just challenge us as a church to trust the Lord with where we are right now and what's going on. So with that, let's turn to the Lord as we sing and pray and give him glory. May his purposes be accomplished in us. Amen.